Thriving, Not Surviving, with your host, Gina Gardner. To lead others, you first need to be the best version of yourself and lead from a place of wholeness. Motivation, empowerment, leadership, personal and spiritual development are just a few of the topics you will hear on Thriving, Not Surviving. So sit back and enjoy the show with your host, Gina Gardner.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to BBS Radio. It's really lovely to see you. Today, I have a very special guest. Her name is Brenda Jacobson, and I'm going to introduce her and I'm going to read her bio because, as you know, I hate to miss any of the richness of people's background. And this is a very impressive lady. Brenda Jacobson is an international emotional intelligence trainer and founder of Awakening Consciously. Through her career as a finance executive and a business strategist, as well as recovering from a 3,000-foot fall down a mountain, Brenda is a master of strategies that optimize personal performance. The greatest gift for her was in discovering and understanding the energy body and the chakra system. Understanding how they worked, how to read the signals, how to spot issues, and how to correct them was like finding the user manual that she'd sought throughout her life. She now works with people through meditations, courses, books, and other mediums to ease their journey of awakening into this new world. Brenda, a huge welcome. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Now, Brenda and I met through LinkedIn not so very long ago. And you know when you meet somebody and you feel as if you've known them forever? It was a bit like that. And Brenda gave me the opportunity to try her meditations, and I've been using them. And I have to tell you, they are brilliant. So, Brenda, can you share with us some of your story? Because it sounds pretty dramatic, 3,000 feet down a mountain. Mm-hmm.
Actually, the journey with the energy body and the meditation started even before that. That was just a reminder for me. But yeah, I was out skiing one day and up in the Rocky Mountains, caught an edge right off the chair and went down. And it was just such a steep run that and hard packed snow that there was no stopping. And so I just tumbled and cartwheeled and flipped around and right down to the bottom. The really interesting thing for me, though, Gina, was after I lost, you know, they call it a yard sale, you know, all the equipment's gone somewhere up the hill. And I started digging my heels in to try to slow down. And this voice in my head said, stop it, just be a rag doll. And I thought, well, might as well. So I just relaxed. And at the bottom of the mountain, I did not have a stress response. My breathing was normal. My heart rate was normal. The only thing that I had was I was dizzy because I'd been spinning all the way down. The ski patrol that was on the chair came racing down saying, don't worry, I have a stretcher coming. And he said, what are you doing standing up? And like, nobody walks away from a fall like this. And I did, or at least I thought I did. I skied 10 more runs that day. And then when I took my boot off, I realized I fractured my ankle, but it was kind of casted. But it was, what I did was knock my head off by 34 degrees where the head sits in the spine at C1. I knocked it off. So it took about 6 months for every system in my body to break down and for me to not be able to walk. I couldn't walk normally. I couldn't. For going from being extremely active to sitting on the couch for two and a half years was a real awakening process for me.
I'm sure it was. But I mean, when you're going through that, and those of you that know my story will realize that our stories hugely resonate because we've both got this relationship with mountains and falling down them. What for you made you realize that this was a sign that things need to be done differently?
I think that, you know, through that recovery, I had to rebuild every aspect of my being. Like I was, my physical body was broken. Every element of it had broken down. I was in a huge depression. I was angry at the world. I didn't want my life was quite perfect before that. I wasn't ready to let it go. And I, you know, my mental processes, my brain chemistry was all out of whack. Funny enough, it hit the numbers center of my brain. The way that my brain processed numbers was the most impacted. And I was a chief financial officer. So what kind of CFO cannot process numbers? It was a real clear sign that, and I'd been burning out up until that point, and I'd been feeling like I had to get out of that profession. I just didn't know where to go. And so I was really resistant to getting out. So this was, I really look at this as being the greatest gift that I've received in my life. I wouldn't do it again, and I wouldn't wish it on anybody else, but this is what it took for me, being as stubborn as I was, to actually move off of that track and onto this other track that had been coming to me since the early 2000s.
So let's then move from you're sitting on the couch dealing with really incredibly dark and difficult things to creating something very different. How did you create the transition?
You know, it happened, you know, it really happened to me. What I found is after about 2 years, I had the strength to get off the couch, but I still could not get back to work. And a message came through and said, it's time to start painting. And I thought, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I've never picked up a paintbrush in my life. But I'd learned, did not want to go down another mountain. So I kept my eyes out for an art teacher who showed up. Within a year, an art teacher showed up and I started painting and totally shocked myself with the quality of the pictures that I was painting. Like I have people wanting to buy them all the time. I want people asking me to do an art show. I said, why would I do an art show? What if somebody wanted to buy them? Like, I don't consider myself an artist. I consider that as documenting my journey of healing, and they hang all over my house. I'm not willing to let them go. So that was the start. And then I realized that when I was having to heal every aspect of my life, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, there is not a tool out there that did all of those things. I could find nutrition over here, fitness over there, emotional intelligence someplace else, mindset someplace else. I did not have the bandwidth to go in multiple directions. And so I really was hindered by not having access to a tool. So I came out and I started looking for ways to help people heal every aspect of their life. And this is where the work that I had started before the fall really came back to me on the energy body, because it deals with physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. You have all those aspects of the body there. And just learning how to use it, how to optimize it, how to understand it. It has been the greatest gift that I have been given.
So how does that work? For those people who perhaps don't understand what an energy body is, that have no idea of the magnitude of the tools that you're talking about, can you describe that?
You know, as physical beings, we're really aware of our physical bodies. I was extremely aware of my physical body and what was working and what wasn't. I was not aware that around that I have an emotional body and a mental body and a spiritual body that all had equally as much influence on my life as my physical body did. Once I started to engage with that, we have seven main chakras. We have a ton of chakras, but seven main chakras in our physical body that feed energy to every single cell in our body. They manage every single system. Every emotion is processed through those. Everything that happens in our life is impacted by that chakra system and the energy body around it. So meridians, chakras, the whole intricacy of that system Mm-hmm. Once you understand it, it is so easy to start understanding, you know, why you have this physical pain, or why, for me, it started with my weight. Why could I not lose weight? Like, I dieted, I didn't eat anything, I exercised crazy amounts, and I still could not. I finally went for acupuncture, and she said, oh yeah, I deal with this all the time. And then after a few sessions, I wasn't showing any results, and she said, your issue is not physical, it's emotional. And that just blew my mind, because I had no concept of that at the time, and it scared the heck out of me. So it was a huge, long journey to understand how to work with all of those various different systems when I was so set in my physical realm. And but I got a lot of spiritual help as I moved along the way. The first meditation that I did on clearing and healing the chakra system, it came to me, like it literally came through me. It took about 20 minutes to download. Mm-hmm. And I used it for about 8 weeks or so.
Right.
As I went through, you know, it came at a time when I was trying to get out of my CFO role and into something else. And that was a big challenge for me. And this helped me get through there quite gracefully. But then at the end of 8 weeks, I was told it's time to get it out now. And I'm going, what does that even mean? My CFO brain could not wrap myself around media production. And so I did actually got it produced, didn't know what to do with it. So I just gave it away to people and said, I think this might help you. And one young gentleman that I gave it to loaded it up to a free download site. This was back in 2008.
Yep.
And basically was giving it away. And it was, again, another great gift. I wouldn't have ever thought of doing that or done it. Wasn't even aware those sites existed, but it downloaded over 40,000 times in 2 months.
Good grief.
And it was the highest download, the top download on that site for 2 months. Who would have thought it? It was a chakra meditation. Nobody even knew what it was about. But I started getting people emailing me from all over the world saying how this helped them, how it healed them, how that just these profound impacts. And I had no ability to understand it then. The understanding of it is it cleared people's energy bodies, that energetic debris that we accumulate through life. And it just, and the joy with it is you do it when you're asleep, like you put it on, and it's most effective when the conscious mind is not present. So when you're asleep, your conscious mind goes to rest, and then this can heal. But you don't even have to take time out of your day to do it.
No. Well, the one that I've given, I'm still using it and giving it a go. And it's an interesting sense that when you wake up, there is a feeling of being more refreshed.
Yeah.
So I had people thoroughly recommend it.
Yeah. Thank you. I had people say to me, I didn't hear a word that you said.
No.
But somehow my day, the next day, goes much smoother when I've put it on at night.
I've listened to the first paragraph endless times.
And that's about it. Yes. It affects, what I experienced with it is it affects everybody differently. People who had, my sister, for example, we lost one of my sisters who was her twin, and she had not dealt with it properly. And she said that when she did try to listen, she could listen to this until we got to the heart chakra. And she says, and then I go to sleep every time. And then, you know, I wake up when it's around the throat chakra, the third eye chakra. And I'm going, you're not going to sleep. You're just like physically being taken out of it so that the healing could do, because she was too blocked up to let the healing happen. So this is the power when you're asleep. It just goes and does it.
You know, there's an expression, isn't there, that people, you say, you've got to get out of your own way.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's going on, is that when you take the conscious brain with the buts and oh no's and I can't out of it, and you're unconscious, and you can just access what's going on.
Yeah. And you'll, the conscious brain, if it's something that is foreign to you, which it is to most people, certainly was back in 2008, what happens is the conscious mind's going, oh, this is silly. Like, this is just stupid. This isn't going to do any good. How could this make any? And then you just, you do block any of the healing frequencies that are coming through. I had a guy reach out. This is, it just reawakened this this year. I had a guy reach out to me on LinkedIn and said, I've been listening to this for over 10 years. And like, I've talked to him since we actually are becoming good friends. And he, but he'd listened, he said, I stopped for a year and I just revisited it and it's got the same healing power. But he told me every success I've had in my life is because of this meditation. He's gone from homeless to millions, And he says, every time I've come back is because of this meditation. So
that's amazing, isn't it?
Who knew? Yeah, who knew? So it's very powerful. I've also, just getting a book out on the chakra system, on how it relates to this world. This is ancient wisdom. Like, this has been around for 5,000 plus years. And it just amazes me how relevant it is to these crazy times that we're going through in the 21st century. How relevant that ancient wisdom still is for us.
I think that's, it's very true, isn't it? If you look at the old philosophers, Plato, Socrates, they have so much to offer us today. It's still incredibly relevant.
It is.
If we don't choose to look for some of those ancient wisdoms, we're missing out on such richness.
Yeah. So I love the way you put that.
Thank you. So you have your meditations, but come on, what's the dream? Where now? What are you going to do with this? Because it's pretty evident that that's just the tip of the iceberg.
You know, it is. And it is, you know that I've spent the last few years building a company around emotional intelligence. And it is equally as relevant. There's so many tools out there.
Yeah.
That help people. And honestly, in the crisis that we're in right now, people need all the help they can get. And I have come across people that do EFT, emotional frequency therapy, I think is what that is. And, and NLP work and Psych-K and, you know, all these tools that I didn't even know what they were, but they're equally relevant. And I don't believe that there's one solution that's going to fix everybody in the world. I believe that people have to experience for themselves all of these different modalities that, and it will be a combination of those things that will work. And there's an infinite number of combinations. Something different is going to work for every person. So my goal right now is to pull together this community of people that are serving in this way and make that available to everybody in this community. So it will be, you know, I'll be introducing sound wellness. I have a good friend who works with people through sound. You know, she's told me that sound was our first healer. Like, it was how people healed. The very first thing that came to humanity was sound, and it has very powerful healing qualities. And it's just, you know, becoming familiar with that. So if I can collect these people together into a community that offers all kinds of options for people to awaken. I talk about it as awakening, because I see mine as really, I open my eyes to a huge world that I was ignorant of. And so it really is, we're helping people awaken. We call it awakening consciously, because it is really having that conscious intent to transform your own life. And I just want to offer the tools for them to be able to do that. Community is so important. It's just vital to our survival going forward. I was told nobody can be an island here now. Like, we have to rely on community. So,
you know, even that's going back, isn't it? Because if you think about when Homo sapiens, who first was evolved, we lived in communities, and your very survival and that was probably in the most part at a physical level, was determined by being part of that clan.
It's that tribal mentality, and it is programmed right into our DNA.
And whilst there are downsides to that tribal mentality, and we can see evidence of that as we are recording this, and this recording has been done, a while before it's actually shown, in terms of the tribal divisions that we see, where hot-wired, like cavemen, to see things that are different as a threat. At the same time, if we were to take the best of the tribal situation, it takes a whole village to raise a child. It is about, you have a set of skills and I've got a set of skills that are different. If we combine our skills, then we are stronger than the sum of the parts.
Absolutely. And I think the difference is that we're going to be visiting community at a different level than it ever has been before. And I think a lot of that is that I believe we're moving from being Homo sapiens to Homo luminous.
I would agree.
To really moving out of that dark part and into the light. And I think we're going to see that. I think COVID was brilliant at revealing to us where society is broken. And I think that we saw it in our...
Important. How many people have you heard say, I spent time with the family and I recognized that I was missing out on the children growing up. And
absolutely.
I'm in nature and really appreciating the splendor of nature.
Yeah. I got out hiking all the time and I saw so many more people out there. I'm going like, I want my trails back. Now I have to go find something more secluded. But it did thrill me to see that people were actually connecting with the earth. That earth energy is
that we don't lose that, because the thing
I don't think that we'll be allowed to. I think that it was part of this awakening process. And I think too that we saw our political systems break down. We certainly saw mental health systems break down, healthcare systems all over breaking down. We saw our economies breaking down. We saw everything that as we knew it.
To go into the new, you have to let go of the old, don't you?
Yeah.
And there's always that period, and I think we're in that now, where there's that turbulence, that not knowing. Yeah. And before we started this interview off air, we were talking about, that we don't know what we don't know, and there's exciting things coming. But who knows where it's going to take us? And if we have faith and hold our nerve and keep the intention that we're going to be of service, that we are coming from a place of our heart and love, then you can't go far wrong.
Absolutely. And to bring it back to the energy body work that I do, when you can clear those channels, all of that stuck energy, which is usually dark contracting energy, the fear and the sadness and the despair and the hopelessness and confusion. When you can clear those or have them cleared from your system, all of a sudden possibilities start to present themselves and your intuition becomes so much stronger. And you don't know how you know things, but really when you optimize that system, it makes the unknowable knowable. And it's not coming from, I was told that thoughts, knowledge are different than thoughts. So the research and the data that we've lived by is information. But knowledge comes at such a deep level, totally different. And that's what we're moving into.
I think that is so right and so powerful. And for many people who are listening to this, who are going through real challenges, who are struggling to see the light that comes out of the darkness. I think it's important to recognize that you don't see light unless there is darkness. There's this duality, isn't there, to life, that actually,
absolutely,
that there has to be that contrast. And very often, they talk about the darkest part of the night is that bit just before the dawn.
Yeah,
I think as we look back in a year, 2, 5, 10 years time and we look back at this period, we will recognize that whilst it was very painful, like birth is painful, actually out of this comes huge possibilities.
And this is my fall down the mountain. It was not pleasant to go through, but the greatest gift.
And I would say, our mountains may have been thousands of miles apart, but I think...
but they made their point the same way.
Yeah,
I love your mentioning of the dawn, because that's the awakening, right?
Definitely.
That dawn is what we want to guide people through, that awakening process to where they see the new brilliant day that's ahead of us.
And the endless, limitless possibilities that are open to them if they're prepared to step out of their comfort zone and to grasp this new awakening.
Yes.
And know that there are
people... Open their eyes and see it.
And there are people like you and I who are there to help them. So where can they find you?
Website is awakeningconsciously.com. The app will be out. It is awakeningconsciously.com/app. And it will give, I'm giving away that meditation on that app, free gift for people to start their process and just see the power of it.
Brilliant.
Free download on the app. You get that. You get a bunch of other tools and you will become part of this awakening community.
Thank you so much. We'll make sure that those details are in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining me today and sharing. It's such an important message, and I hope those of you that are out there listening to this, that you'll take the opportunity to sign up for the app, use the healing meditation, and you know, it is time to embrace the opportunities. So I'm Gina Gardner of Genuinely You. Don't go away, because after the break we've got a genuine chat with Rachel and I. So thank you very much. See you in a moment. Bye bye now.
If you're a businesswoman who is overwhelmed or suffering from imposter syndrome, who is tired of having one disastrous relationship after another, or who finds it hard just to say no, well, it's time to take care of you. You get the best out of life by contacting Gina Gardner, relationship coach and best-selling author and motivational speaker. Just visit genuinely-you.com. Or you can email Gina directly at gina@genuinely-you.com. Take action now. Start to thrive rather than simply survive. Imagine being a highly successful, enlightened leader who is in complete alignment with your best self, who makes a positive difference on a daily basis. Let me introduce Gina Gardner, an expert in developing transformational leadership with over 30 years of experience. Gina has developed a unique and unrivaled approach to help you step into your genuine power to become an enlightened leader. And when you do, amazing things happen. Go to enlightenedleadership.co or email Gina at gina@genuinely-you.com.
Hello there, and welcome back. As you know, the second part of the show is always a genuine chat with myself and Rachel Davidson, both of us international number one best-selling authors, very different style. Rachel, spiritual novels, and she has a great trilogy and is now writing another book. I can't wait to get to it. And for me, it's all about personal and spiritual development and enlightened leadership. Today, we're going to be talking about grief. As we create this program for you, we are in the middle of a pandemic, and there are many people who have lost loved ones. Well, that's not new. That's happening all the time, but it's happening on a scale that for many people is out of their experience. But it doesn't matter what the numbers are. Grief is something that affects each of us as an individual. There can be a collective grief, but if you've lost somebody you love, then the act of grieving is something that can be really challenging and painful and difficult. And I wanted to use today to explore grief. But before we talk about personal grief around losing somebody that you love, and that could be because they've died or because a relationship has finished, I think we can grieve in many ways. Grieving when you've been made redundant, that's a form of grief that people often go through. When there is a sudden disability or illness that robs you of the life that you thought you were going to have. So I want to make it clear before we start that today the focus is on when you lose someone you love. I've got personal experience of that, having lost both my parents and very suddenly losing my brother, who at the time was 49, and we all thought perfectly healthy. Mm. Who it is, whether that's your husband or wife, your partner, you know, my sister lost her eldest son. You know, we can all talk about this is worse than that, but it isn't in reality. Because each time you lose someone that you love, it's interesting the name that we talk about, we lose somebody. There is that sense that we have no access to them. I actually have a different view. We have a different access to them. And I'd like to start off before we just explore that is in giving you sharing with you the advice that was given to me on one occasion after my brother had died. And I was really struggling to come to terms with how such a vibrant, big personality could be here one second and gone the next. And it literally was that quick.
Yeah.
And somebody said to me, you know your brother well. And if you tune in, you can hear his voice. And you know him so well that you know how he would react to certain situations. So imagine yourself listening to the radio. Now, I'm going to use UK stations, but you could just as well translate that into any stations. So in the UK, you'll all be aware that we have the BBC. But BBC radio comes in all sorts of forms. Radio 1, which is very poppy, to Radio 4, which tends to be conversational and people think a little highbrow. Radio 3 is classical music and so on. And the suggestion was that even though I might be tuned into Radio 4, I know that Radio 1 exists. And if I choose to, I can tune into Radio 1 and I can listen to very up-to-date records. And so the person that you love isn't here, present in this moment with you, but tune into them and you'll be able to hear their voice. Tune into them and you'll have access to what you know they're likely to have said in any given circumstances. I found that of huge comfort, and I do it all the time. And I know that from the many clients that I've worked with who have been struggling with grief of all sorts, that have recognizing that if you choose to, you have the facility to tune into that other person's voice, the way they would have responded to you, can be a huge comfort. And the other thing I'd like to say before we then start to explore it in the broadest sense is, if you know that person loved you, know that one of the things that they would want for you is that you miss them, but you don't let it define your life, that you actually move on. But when you're in the first throes of grief, that can feel impossible. You know, how can there be life after this? How can I be happy after this? But if you give yourself permission to, then yes, you can. And that the hurt and the difficulty around their passing will over time, if you allow it, fade. And the personality and the good stuff, the good memories and the what you've enjoyed will come through. And that might not feel possible at the time, but it does if you allow it. So let's look at grief in the round. It's a part of living, isn't it? Death is one of the few constants that we live with from the moment we're born. We know that at some point we are going to die and leave this life. And those who are left behind have to deal with that.
I wish I could quote the poem, but it goes something along the lines of do not cry for the dead, pity the living or something. And it's true that none of us are getting out of this thing called life alive.
No, that's very true.
I think a lot of people suffer from grief so much because as a modern Western society, we do not acknowledge that constant fact. We do not acknowledge it from just a simple sort of day-to-day momentary survival aspect, because if you were constantly thinking about your death, then you wouldn't be having much of a life. And that's not how our brains and our emotions are programmed. But I think, and certainly this pandemic has demonstrated to me how irrationally scared we are of dying. It's almost like 2020 was the first wake-up call for the globe that people die. And the irony for me is that I have not suffered any close death in my family. We have had grandparents die, obviously, because they would be extremely old by now, but they weren't close to me, and I was a young child, and I wasn't affected by their absence in the same way that my parents were affected by their absence. Yeah. And then I went on and wrote my first book, which was about a young man's whole journey towards death, having never sort of been close to it or whatever. But I do know that I chose that topic for a story, partly because of my own desire to understand death a bit more, to question why. I mean, you know, why do we fear it? And what is the impact of it on those left behind? Because I know I've got it coming. My parents are both still alive, but they won't be forever. So I have this looming, horrible phase of life, which will be challenging to me. And my viewpoint is that I will still grieve, but I would like my grief to be purposeful and not to be just shocked because, you know, I just didn't want to look in that direction and see it coming. Your brother's death, of course, was such a sudden, unexpected event that you could never have prepared yourself for that. I don't know the chronology of whether your parents had passed before he died or after. So I don't know if you had experience.
My mum died when I was 39 and she was 67. And my dad died at the age of, well, it was just the month before his 89th birthday. And he died a year before my brother. And one of the things that I was comforted by, strangely, was that my parents had both died before David had died. And the circumstances of his death is that he was doing a last practice to the London to Brighton cycle race. Paradoxically, the charity that he was supporting was the British Heart Foundation. And he was driving, cycling up a hill, not a steep hill, but a long hill. And suddenly the group of people that he was with thought he'd fallen off his bike, but he was dead before he hit the floor. And there happened to be a medic in his group who tried to resuscitate him, but he was already dead. And I think about that, and it was, I think, the shock. And it's interesting that even when you know somebody's going to die, and my mum was ill with cancer for a couple of years, and actually in her passing, at the same time as grief, was this huge relief that she was no longer suffering. And the recognition that actually in that case, the grief was all for me.
Yeah.
Because watching somebody who is struggling to manage a really painful situation to which there is only one relief, and that is to die.
Yeah.
She had come to terms with that.
Yeah.
And I think was more than ready. And so for me, the overriding sadness was for me.
Because that's, I think, what grief is. The grief that I have suffered in my life relates to sort of the more minor life events, like, you know, sudden massive changes, like redundancy you mentioned, but also, you know, dogs dying. I mean, I think Miranda Hart, the comedian, hit some of the headlines recently because her dog, her precious Peggy dog, passed, and she doesn't feel able to carry on with whatever piece of work. And I'm afraid I'm not up to date with what she was doing mainstream media, but I just happened to see some commentary on it, and somebody else who had a well-known dog was sort of supporting her and saying how devastating it can be to lose a dog, and it shouldn't be. She was probably getting some stick for it just being a dog type of thing, but you know, yes, it is just a dog compared to a brother, compared to a parent. Yes, we all acknowledge that, but nevertheless, it is still a sudden absence that you, as the person left behind, have to suddenly accommodate. And it's a weird feeling. It's definitely a weird feeling of that sense of removal, permanent removal, this sense of I will never in this manner ever again be able to interact with them. So it's all about the physicality of us, I guess, you know, the sound of their voice, the colour of their eyes, the touch of them, this, that, and the other. And, you know, that I think is, I definitely enjoyed exploring James's sort of, you know, coming to terms and the acceptance of what that would mean, partly because I think I would hope that having sort of tried to face that outcome, I'm slightly better prepared. But I think the key thing about grief, especially when you're talking about a loss of a loved one, is that it is a force outside of you that everybody knows the five stages, although don't ask me to quote them, Gina. Everybody knows there's five stages of grief. But I don't think that I'm just going to progress through them in a linear fashion.
And neither does anybody.
No, and I think that's the point. I think that part of dealing with grief is to accept that you are not dealing with it.
You it's are where you are.
You sort of thing. So, and that sense of surrender, which is, of course, what death is. It is a surrender to a different, well, I believe it is a surrender to a different manifestation.
And I think, you know, surrender for most of us, for most of, in most contexts, is really challenging.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that I think that many people are, well, it's added to the problem, is we have many rituals around people's passing. You know, you look at...
As many as we used to. It's interesting, the Celtic ancestry around death is a much... I mean, I think if you go back in time when humans used to pop off this world a lot more usually because modern medicine hadn't been invented and blah blah blah, but death was a much more accepted part of the daily life, and the manner in which somebody passed was definitely not hidden from
it was a daily part of living. And it, you know, you don't have to go back very far that whoever died would be on the dining room table for 3 days.
So that is the ceremony, and I know the Celtic belief around bringing the body back into the family home and allowing the spirit to take many days to depart. But that's also a very practical aspect of really coming to terms with the absence of spirit within this body. And nowadays I think a lot of the process around death is that it's hidden and quickly packaged away and dealt with.
I think
a lot of why people struggle with it is that there isn't that sense of having time in the immediate to really get it.
And yet there are cultures where because of the practicalities, that it is usual for the body to be buried very quickly.
Yes.
However, the rituals go on. So sitting Shiva, for example, goes on, I believe, for a couple of weeks. Oh. For me, I think that when you look at the rituals around how we deal with people's passing, that they can give huge comfort. Now, in my job as head teacher, principal of the school, over the years, I went to many, many funerals of staff, children, parents, people within the local authority and so on. Mm-hmm. And so probably I attended more than my fair share of funerals. Mm-hmm. And some of them were, you know, of children. And for me, that seems to have a poignancy, which is
definitely
huge, where there is so much unfulfilled potential. Yes. Where if somebody's 109 when they die, it's sad,
of course, but
it's not a tragedy.
Yes.
But what struck me is that some of those funerals seemed to me to be heavy and add to the sense of complete. You know, bereavement comes from the word, I think, of being bereft. And it was those funerals were not a celebration of that person's life, mm-hmm. but an absolute outpouring of outrage, if you like, because they had died. And it came away from those feeling that there was something missing. And yet I've been to funerals where the life has been celebrated, however long that life may have been, and it have come away feeling enriched by that experience. Hmm. And I think back to my parents' funeral and my brother's funeral, and there was great comfort in that we came together and we celebrated that life. And in my brother's case, I would say it was the best and the worst day of my life.
Mm, yep.
Brilliant, brilliant sunshine, beautiful June day. Mm. There were so many people came to the funeral that there were hundreds on the lawn outside the church where the ceremony was taking place. And we then we went to the bury. David was buried, and there was about a half a mile distance between the church and the graveyard. And the people walked. Everybody was wearing bright colours. I couldn't walk that far. I was in the car behind the hearse. The windows were down, and we could hear the skylarks. Mm. And we went to the burial ground, which is very pretty and very rural. And then we went to the wake, and time after time, people came and said, "You won't know this. Mm. David did this, or David helped me in that way." And even in recounting this to you, the listener, for me, that is a celebration of David's life, the man that he was, who would go out of his way to help other people and not make a big song and dance about it, because nobody knew most of these things. Mm. And, you know, I think to each of you who are listening to this, who have lost somebody, recognize that you are richer because you have known them, mm. and that you have access to them if you choose to tune in. Mm. I have to smile to myself because I hear my mum's voice, generally speaking, when I'm doing something that she wouldn't approve of. particularly when I'm doing householdy things and I'm making a bit of a shortcut, I can hear my mum saying, "That wasn't what I taught you." Mm-hmm. Or when I'm, you know, cobbling together a button, my mum was a court dressmaker and she's tutting, which she used to do in real life. But in real life, when she was here, she would tut and then say, "Give it to me. At least I know it's done properly then." But we're coming to the end of our time today. Mm-hmm. If you are grieving for whatever reason, just know that we are sending you lots of love. And it's really important at this time that you recognize that grief has, you can go to the books and it will talk to you about the five stages. But you are where you are. Be kind to yourself. Give yourself time to grieve. Give yourself space. But at the same time, recognize that your loved one would want you to embrace life, to live life to the full and to make the most of every day. I believe that every challenging thing gives us a gift, and these were the gifts that I took from my brother's death. One, live life to the full. Yeah. Life's not a spectator sport. Grab it by the throat, as he did, and make sure that you live every day and make it count in the small ways and the big ways. Second, your health is so precious. David died of a congenital heart problem that if he'd known about it, it could have been easily treated. It was never picked up by the medics. He was treated for having asthma. It now turns out it wasn't asthma. So look after yourself. What you feed yourself, how you treat yourself, all of those things make a difference. So be careful. Be proactive about your health. Thirdly, it's relationships that are important. David was amazing at keeping in touch, and it would often be just a text saying, love ya, or thinking of you, or just two little crosses, and it takes no time at all. But those were precious at the time, and they're ever more precious now. So tell people that you love and that you care and respect. Tell them, and tell them often. Mm-hmm. Don't wait to say these things until it's too late. And recognize that life is just beautiful and precious. So focus on the good things and the things you can do rather than focusing on what you can't and the complaining. Take care of yourself. We'll see you on the next show. You can find all our books on Amazon and on the website. Thanks very much for joining me. Sending you lots of love.